Ron Lamberty, I'm Senior Vice President of the American Coalition for Ethanol.
Ron, a lot to talk about here at the ACE Conference in Minneapolis this week. I wanted to begin with the subject of exports and what's happening with ethanol right now.
Well, because of the fact that our demand has been messed with quite a bit by EPA's small refinery waivers, the way we get rid of that extra gallonage is by exporting it. And our exports this year, I'm sure, will set a record over last year, which was a big year. Most of that is going to Brazil, Canada, places like that. But more and more, we're talking with people in Mexico. I've been making some trips to Mexico. But Mexico, China, Japan, India is a ways off, but there are people talking to them. But we're learning where the rest of the world might want to be using our fuel, and they're doing a lot more of it. So I guess with every bad situation, maybe this is one of those whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger things, because that seems to be what the producers are doing.
What are those conversations like when you're talking to representatives from another country about U.S. ethanol and why they should not only change their fueling over to something that's renewable like ethanol, but why getting that from the U.S. is important?
Well, I think to start out with, most of the countries that are interested in it are either interested in it because they need fuel, period. Any kind of fuel, they're just looking for another molecule because they've got a growing number of vehicles in their country and oil prices are whatever they are. So they need fuel, but the other part is the price. The fact that ethanol is really inexpensive compared to gas now. I mean, even in the U.S., it's about 75 cents a gallon cheaper as a rack price compared to gasoline. So that drives a lot of the use. And the clean air part of it is of a lot of interest, especially in places like China. They see what's happened when E10 was, became pretty much the fuel of choice in the U.S. and how our air quality has improved. But a lot of it has to do right now with price and just availability of a fuel, just making sure that they have enough fuel, because more and more people around the world are driving vehicles and passenger vehicles. China, for example, I think as late as 2007, we had about 225 million cars in the U.S., and they had about 60 million passenger vehicles, which includes some really small vehicles that are maybe two-seaters. But last year, I think our total was 255, and theirs was over 350, I think. They've grown that fast. So, the economy, the middle class, I think, is growing in China. They're going to buy different forms of transportation, and those use liquid fuels. So it's an opportunity for our industry to get in there, make sure they're familiar with it and that they know they can get it. As soon as, I suppose, one way or the other, this tariff thing's got to get settled, because part of the reason we've done so well this year is that a whole bunch of it went over before the tariff was doubled. There are good markets out there for us if the U.S. is going to play games with us.
This export trajectory, 2 years in a row, record levels, I would imagine that you're foreseeing that maybe becoming the norm, where year after year you're going to see these numbers grow as you get into more markets and some of these current markets expand their usage. I mean, is that kind of what your expectation is, Ron?
Well, it would be awesome if we could go, get back to selling the amount we're supposed to sell in the U.S. first, because that would be a great growth market for us. We're, with the $15 billion that's required by the RFS, 14.3, 14.1 is about what we've been selling. So there's still probably, under that scenario, nearly a billion gallons of market available. If E15 were to take off, there's a whole bunch more there. Naturally, we'd love to sell it all as close to where it's manufactured as possible, because freight takes away part of the profit. But the fact that there are export markets that want the fuel mean that we can get a better price for it. There's more demand, the price improves, and we can make more money, maybe increase the amount of plants out there that are making ethanol. I think we've been growing still at a rate of a couple hundred million gallons a year through just different improvements that the plants have made themselves and a couple of new plants out there. So as long as we can keep finding places for them to send the fuel, we can continue growing that market and that market for corn and make sure that all of these economic advantages we've seen to the growth of the ethanol market continue. We do everything we can. My job is usually to talk with the nuts and bolts guys, the pump guys and the station guys about how they actually physically do it. And there's interest out there. There's, you know, there are entrepreneurs that run gas stations that want to be able to choose their fuel. Mexico is where I've spent a lot of my time recently, but just like in the United States, where somebody's looking at some product they can sell to make a little bit more money, we're talking to the same type of people in Mexico, and I'm sure they're the same type of operations all over the world.
And you just got done moderating a discussion with retailers. What were some of the takeaways, in your opinion?
Well, one of the big takeaways is that, you know, we've been messing around with E15 for several years now. They've both found success. Sheets, a couple years ago, started selling E15 as unleaded 88. Basically, it's an unleaded fuel. It's got 15% ethanol, but it's 88 octane. You still have to have the warning label, I guess I call it. You have to have the label on the fuel. But they've had good success calling it unleaded 88. Quick Trip, which does business, it's the Quick Trip with a K, it does business in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa, mirrored that when they started. And these two guys, one of them runs a four store chain around Milwaukee. He's using unleaded 88 as a name, and they wanted us to do unleaded 88 as a name nationwide, because when they don't all want their own little brand, they like the fact that when a customer pulls in and sees unleaded 88 there, they may have seen it a lot of different places, and it gives customers more confidence to just buy the fuel. So we could go through all kinds of machinations and try and come up with our own name and logo, but the fact is there's two of the big chains in the U.S. and Come and Go is another big one, but some of these big guys who have already done the I don't know if they've done research, but unleaded 88 works for them, and that's what we're advising people. The other thing they told us is keep E85 relevant. A lot of most of the, if not all of the credits for E85 that would go to automakers are gone as of this year, I believe. And so the automakers are hesitant to make flex fuel vehicles. What these guys pointed out is that the math that makes it possible for them to aggressively market ethanol comes from being able to sell E85, because that's where they get their best margin, and yet that's still the best bargain for the customer. And one of them said flat out, if E85 goes away, I'm not sure I sell any of the other blends. I probably don't, because then they're just like everybody else and I don't have an advantage, I don't have an edge. So I've been hearing that from a lot of the marketers I've talked to, is that E85 is very, very important to us. Don't walk away from it. Make sure that that's still available. They just spent a whole bunch of money on equipment that can handle it, and they want us to do everything we can to make sure that it's a relevant fuel and that people can buy flex fueled vehicles in the future, because that's where the math works best for them and that's where it works best for consumers.
What are you hearing from manufacturers? I mean, is there still an interest in building flex fuel vehicles, or where are they going?
The auto manufacturers that when I've been part of those conversations, it's been basically, if we don't have some kind of incentive from EPA or the federal government to build flex fueled vehicles, it makes it awful tough for us. The fact is they're taking a beating on electric cars right now in order to sell those. So I don't know if that message is completely, I mean, that's a regulation and they're required to do some things, and I don't really know what it is. But, you know, it baffles me why it's not just an option, you know, that if you asked for the option and paid for it, that you could get it. But it seems to me like that would be something that they need to make sure is available to people, because, you know, their complaint before, which was valid, was there aren't enough places to fuel our cars. I always argued with them that that's because it was a flex fuel car, not an E85 car. And if you are a station owner and you can get that customer by selling them E10 or E0, or you can spend a lot of extra money and sell E85, most of them are going to sell E10 and E0, and that's where most of your cars are going to fill up. Now we're at a place where people have realized, you know, station owners have realized the advantages of E85, and there's 5,000 stations out there. Not a huge amount, but it's pretty close to, you know, I think if you doubled that, it would be commensurate with the number of E85 vehicles out there. And because of pricing, it's very attractive now. So I think we have an opportunity for it to grow. So hopefully with some of these rules, and I mean, I'm thankful that I don't have to do that very much, but some of the stuff in there, there's some opportunities, I think, for us to reemphasize E85. But I would say, you know, people who are involved in ethanol agriculture need to be talking about the importance of keeping E85 alive, because that's how these things get done.
The whole idea of what the consumer is looking for at the pump and how everything is labeled, it's fascinating to me. I know when I go to get gas, I'm looking for that E. I'm looking for ethanol. We have a flex fuel van, and so I'm looking for the E85 pump because we're going to save a lot of money. But maybe that's my Midwestern, my ag background that makes me do that, and there are people in other parts of the country that they don't care if there's an E in front.
Well, in your case, if you have a flex fuel vehicle, anybody who has a flex fuel vehicle looks for that E85 or flex fuel or something like that. That's one of the things that we learned from talking to consumers at stations, is that when they see the E, they assume it's a flex fuel. So E15, they assume that they can't use it in their regular car, even though 90% of the cars can use it. That's why the unleaded 88 thing has done so well. Bob O'Connor, who's got the Jets stores in Milwaukee, said they checked the numbers before he came here. The 7 weeks before they changed their name from E15 to unleaded 88, the 14 weeks after, they had an increase in sales of 274%. So we're not like most consumers. You know, this is stuff we work with every day. There are topics we talk about. Most consumers pull up, and when we'd ask them at a grand opening, say, what do you use in your car? They say, regular, or whatever's cheapest. You know, that's kind of the level of, and it's not because they don't care, it's because they shouldn't have to. I mean, that's, you give them the products that you think they want, and they pick the one that they do want. And people who care about having a lot of octane will pay for premium. There aren't very many of them. But some people who care about having a lot of octane will look at an E30 and maybe put it in, and maybe do so, you know, quasi-illegally. But, you know, that people usually pull up to the pump and they want to know, can I use it? But can I use it sometimes comes right after, what does it cost? Mm-hmm. So they need to have something they can rely on. I think having one name, and listening to these guys talk and the people that are on our marketer advisory panel, I think the consistency makes it something that consumers are more comfortable with. And when it gets right down to it, whether we're in the ethanol industry or whether you're talking to groups of farmers, I want everybody to buy our fuel because they love it, but I mainly want everybody to buy our fuel. And if the name that they put on it tells them about the quality of it, because it's higher octane, so 88 is out there, that's great. I would love for them to know that it's made by their neighbors and that it cleans their air. And some people, we need to keep giving that message, because that resounds with some people. But the bottom line is the bottom line, and that is you got to sell more of the product. And if calling it unleaded 88 sells more of it, that's what we got to do.
So that's the message to farmers. The message to people that support ethanol and renewable fuels is maybe getting away from the term ethanol, at least at the pump, and really embracing the unleaded 88.
Yeah, I mean, the insistence should be on marketers doing whatever they can to sell as much of the product as possible. In some markets, that might be calling it ethanol or calling it, whatever it is you want to call it. But in most markets, that means that you're going to have to, you just need to call it what consumers will buy. Understanding that consumers don't love gas either. I mean, nobody says, oh man, I can't wait to go out and fill up my car, or boy, I love ExxonMobil. They're just the swellest guys in the world. And boy, if I could get more gasoline in my car, I would. I wish I could use more. Nobody does that. And so if we can, I used to tell people, if we can just make them hate it less, we've really done a good job. But I think there are advantages. We can sell it to them, sell them the advantages, because once somebody buys something that's less expensive, they're going to want to justify that they didn't buy something cheap. So that's where we can sell them the benefits, and they can say, I bought it because of this and this and this. And I hope someday people will pay extra for ethanol, that it'll be seen as the premium product it is. I would love to have that problem. I would love to have so many people wanting to buy the stuff that the price went way up, because that means they can pay more people, they can build more plants, they can buy more corn at a higher price. All of that stuff is great. But the first thing we got to do is get a lot of people to buy it. And I rely on the guys who sell our product to customers. And I think the more we try to dictate what they call it and what they do with it, and the more we're just, not letting them do their job. We make ethanol. It's a quality product that has a lot of benefits. Choose the ones you want to promote to your customers. You know your customers better than we do, and we'll get in line behind you. We just want to sell more of it.